हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Bhagavad Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 3 Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 69. Vikarana tvan neti chet tad uktam. If one objects that the Lord cannot be the creator because he has no senses, the answer has already been stated. Brahma Sutra 2.1.31. Shrutestu shabda mulatvat. The defects of the agent do not apply to Brahman because of scriptural statements, which are the only proof concerning inconceivable objects. Brahma Sutra 2.1.27. According to this, the Shruti statements are beyond material logic. The Lord is thus endowed with senses and has no senses. Right? Because we're looking at it, how can he have senses and have no senses? So it's being pointed out that the defects of the agent, meaning us, you know, because we're the one trying to understand Brahman. Our defects you can't then put on Brahman. Because we have defects because of senses. You can't put that on the Lord, right? On the Supreme. And how do you understand that? Because the scriptures say so, right? The Shastra says. And the Shastra is the only evidence concerning things that are inconceivable. What's beyond logic can only be understood through the Shastra. Because we're trying to understand something inconceivable, like eternity, or unlimited, with logic. So that's the problem. It can't be understood. So that's the point that it's pointing out here. So then they'll object that the Lord can't have senses, because it's mundane. And so that means he can't be the creator. Right? What doesn't have senses then is created. But at the same time, it's what doesn't have senses then also, according to these philosophies, then can't transform. So then how do you get any creation at all? So then there has to be a separate entity, you know, Maya or illusion, that is doing this. Then where did that come from? If Brahman is supreme, where did this come from? That means Brahman's not that supreme. In a sense, so they're not actually respecting God to the full potency, to the full amount. They're saying, you know, God is supreme, is, you know, Brahman. But at the same time, they're not giving Brahman the credit that it is actually the origin of everything. If you say everything's Brahman, Brahman has to be the source of everything. But they'll say, you know, because Brahman can't transform, therefore, then they don't accept the Shaktis, right? So they don't accept the Shaktis, the senses, the personality, the form, anything like this. So that means then the whole concept of that has to come from somewhere else. And where does that come from? If there's only Brahman and everything comes from Brahman, so that means it has to come from Brahman. So Brahman has Shakti. And then those Shaktis, they transform, because Brahman doesn't transform. Brahman always remains the same. But Shakti transforms. Therefore, the internal potency becomes the external. Right? While still remaining. Like that. That's the... So, that one simple little point then makes all the philosophy work very nicely. But they insist, no, that they're attached to the idea of the impersonal. And not the personal, because for them, people give them trouble. Their senses give them trouble. Their desires give them trouble. You know, they're smart enough to see that, but they're not smart enough to see that, why is there the concept of personal? Where does that come from? That comes from the Supreme. So the Supreme is a person. The Supreme has senses, but they're beyond the material senses. So they don't have the inebrieties of the material. So how to understand that? That's only through Scripture. That's why you have to accept Scripture. And then you have to accept someone to teach you in the Scripture. Therefore, the parampara. Right? So, yeah. According to this, the Shruti statements are beyond material logic. The Lord is thus endowed with senses and has no senses. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. The Lord does not have senses or actions. Svita Sutara Upanishad 6:8. So the Upanishad says both. In the same Upanishad, in the same description over a chapter, a few chapters, it'll both say he has senses and he doesn't have senses. So what does that mean? It means, so if he's beyond all defects, means, and defects come from material senses, means he has no senses, means no material senses. And then if it's saying he has senses, and he's the origin of everything, he's changeless, that means him and those senses are non-different. They're eternal. So they're non-different from him. They are also Brahman. Does that make sense? So that's the natural logic. But the problem is without devotion, Krishna doesn't reveal this. The maximum without devotion you can understand the Supreme is, the Supreme is, you know, yeah, unlimited and unchanging. That much the Lord will allow. Just like in the material world, all knowledge is the Lord. Right? But you have to put in the effort in a particular field to get that result. Like if you put your effort, let's say, into chemistry, your results will come in chemistry. They won't come in, you know, how you say, Greek literature. You know what I'm saying? That's how it works. So the point is it's still him and you put in the effort there. So, but it's allowed. Even though you don't understand him, you put in that effort there, then you'll understand that much of him. Right? So it'll still remain in mundane consciousness, but you will know something, but you'll only see it not connected to the Lord, so it's still, we call it mundane knowledge. Right? So it's still avidya, because it doesn't bring you any closer to the Lord. So, in the same way, as someone can practice the spiritual effort, and they'll get a reward in spiritual, but the maximum they can get is that the Supreme is eternal and unchanging. That's all they can get. And it's still material. It's still a material understanding. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, can we say that the impersonalities accept the Shastra, but not the Parampara?
They accept the Shastra and they accept their own Parampara. So they'll accept from Shankara. Or if they're not Shankarites, they'll accept back to someone else. Because the impersonal philosophy has always been there. Dattatreya and others are impersonalist. But that impersonal concept isn't this Buddhism concept. It's just everything's Brahman. So for them, they don't have a problem that the form is Brahman. So they're actually monists. They're not dualists. Oh, these guys. These are like the whirling Dardavesh bugs. They sit down in one place and then they spin their body. You know, on four legs and two legs they balance. And then they just go like that, go super fast. I'm not sure what it does for them, but they do that. It's the season, they're back. And that's a mosquito. They're also back. Okay. Does that make sense? So you have to get this point, is that they're both happening at once. So it's only from the scriptures. Right? So, we were saying about the impersonalists. So they'll accept, like Sukadeva Goswami, that the form of the Lord is spiritual. Because everything's spiritual. He sees, he doesn't see anything material. All the everything we see, the earth, water, fire, air, ether, is also Brahman. Right? So they don't see anything material. That's the whole point about them. So, but they don't see beyond Brahman. That's the highest they understand of the Supreme. So they're a little bit farther than the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis are the worst because they're actually dualists, though they're claiming that they're monists. Right? It's exclusive monism, so they won't accept dualism, but their whole philosophy is all based on the dualistic concept, is that there's Brahman and there's illusion. And they're two separate entities. So they're actually dualists. But we'll say everything is Krishna. Right? So we're the actual monist, but the point is everything is Krishna, but at the same time everything's different from Krishna. So that's the simultaneous oneness and difference. So we're not exclusive monists, we're not exclusive dualists. Right? So that's the thing, because either way is always a problem. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like in politics. Let's say you have someone who's conservative and you have someone who's liberal. The conservative has some liberal elements, the liberal has some conservative elements. But if we have pure liberal, it's far left. It becomes very destructive. And if we have pure right, it goes so far that it also becomes very destructive. So that's the thing. They're unviable. So the exclusive oneness, the exclusive difference, those are unviable. Because if everything's separate, then who's the supreme? Where's it from? Right? So there has to be that element. That's the point, is God has energies. Energies are from God. So the energies are non-different from God, but they're different from God. You know, it's just how it works. The two go together.
But this is a key point.
It's a very key point. It's a very key point. I mean, it's like even in the Oriental philosophy, you get the Tai Chi. Tai Chi is the point of, you know, we know it as the yin and yang and all that, because you see in the yin, the yin's the feminine principle. There's that little dot in the middle because it culminates in the masculine, and the masculine has the feminine. So if you go so much into doing nothing, at some point you have to do something. And if you do something so much, at some point you just have to stop. So the point is the two go together, but one has to understand the origin is the masculine. You know, so in the yin and yang, then the masculine principle is the origin of the feminine, but they two go together. They're non-different, but they're different. So that is, if you understand that, then all things in the philosophy, you have a place to put them. Because you start with Krishna, and then extend from there out to the material existence. So, you know, does that make sense?
Yes.
So at one end you have Krishna there, and the other end you have, you know, Paramatma on this side. Right? So then everything can be established. The creation can be established. Everything can be properly established. Okay. Or, though you bestow the Shakti for the Jiva's senses, you are without senses. Why? You depend on your Surup Shakti, Swarat. Right? So he gives the senses for the Jiva's, but he doesn't require those senses for him to function. Right? It's not that he's giving you and then he uses those. He has his own. It's the expansion of his that then creates. Yeah? Because you excel all others, devatas like Indra, Animi Shaha, and creators of universes like Brahma, Vishwa Srija, carry Vahanti on their exalted heads, Ut, offerings, Balim, to you, Tava, along with Maya, their master, Ajaya. She, your shadow Shakti, takes the offerings to you, who are accompanied by your Surup Shakti, in order to increase her own wealth. They consume Samadanti, the offerings made by humans. Right, so they're performing their activities. That then is carried on for, they perform their activities, and their activities, their offerings, everything are carried to the Lord through his external potency. Because they're working with the external potency to serve the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. An example is given. The rules of smaller kingdoms, the Varsha, Bhujaha, carry tribute in respect to your order, Vidadati. Bishamad, Vita, Pavate, Bishodeti, Surya, Bishashmad. Agnis Chandras Cha Mrityur Dhavati Panchama. Out of fear of him, the wind blows. Out of fear of him, the sun rises. Out of fear of him, fire, Indra, and death, the fifth, run, Katha Upanishad 2.3.3. Or there is another meaning. Right? So everything's dependent upon Krishna. So they only do their job because Krishna's there. Right? Indra's having a party. Do you think he's going to have to stop his party? No, it's because he has a job. Therefore, he does it. Why would he do it? Because of fear of Krishna. Otherwise, they don't do their job. Or there's another meaning. Go, give a reason why my senses, like hands, etc., arise from my sarup. End quote. The devatas, the deities of the senses, offer tribute to you. As devatas, some are creators of the universe, Vishva Shija. Others cause objects to be revealed through the senses, since they are the shelters of the presiding deities of the senses. You are the shelter of all of them, since this means that your senses are self-manifested, not having devatas as controllers of creator. They must arise from your sarup. So the devatas who are controlling the senses of the living entity, they offer their tribute to the Supreme Lord. So that means their control of the senses has nothing to do with his senses. Right? Means, in other words, that their control does not then lend that he now has senses. They offer their respects to him. They simply do their duties of applying the senses into the living entities, into the jivas. Does that make sense? So therefore, where does his senses come from? They must come from his own sarup, his own form. It's his inherent nature. Right? Does that make sense? Then those shaktis of those of his sarup, that's what is then the demigods are empowered with, that then that is then functioning in the jiva. Does that make sense?
The devas know.
You see in their prayers, they know it all, but then they forget it all. You know, it's like the Chinese, learn it all, forget it all. Right? You know, yeah. So that's the difficulty, is that it was just like, because they're neophyte devotees. Means demigods are neophyte devotees. They're not. They have to be devotees. They can't not be devotees. The citizens on the planet don't necessarily have to be. You know, I mean, they're devotees in the way they accept the Supreme. But it's not necessarily they're following the path of devotion. They're following the path of karma. But the demigods, they have to be devotees. But they're neophytes. Otherwise, why would they end up there? Right? Because you have material, you're approaching the Lord, you have material desire, you maintain that, you have that faith in that, but you have faith in Krishna. So where can those two work? So such devotees, then they can manage the universe, because you can't give that to non-devotees, because they'll just do their own thing. Because they don't care about the Supreme. Right? They'll respect that the Supreme won't bother them if they don't make trouble. But that's as far as it goes. You know, because some of them go beyond, like Aranyakashipu, and that they go beyond that. They don't care. They think that they're independent. But the others, as long as they don't think they're independent, then things go on nicely. No one bothers them.
So you don't have so much association of devotees.
No, like that. That means generally not. It means Prahlad Maharaj is there. Therefore, then they get that association. But that's more of a rare thing. Is by the Krishna's grace. But otherwise, demigods, then they have. So let's take that into our situation. You have devotees. They're all devotees. They have the faith. They're initiated. They're practicing. But are there not times that when they're doing their duties, they forget Krishna? But at other times, then they'll remember. They're performing their sadhanas. They're doing other things. Then they'll remember. So that's how the demigods are. You see, they're there and just sitting on his throne. Everything's happening. He becomes proud. And then something goes wrong, then he'll remember the Lord. You know, so you see is what, in the Bhagavatam, when there's prayers by the demigods, that all these technical points of the philosophy, they know. Right? Because they're devotees. They're coming in parampara. But the difficulty is that they tend to get distracted by their position in the heavenly planets. Right? You know, it's just like, we get a little money, we get distracted. Like that. And now, there you have that special river where that one tree is that has these huge mangoes the size of elephants, and where they fall, then it makes a river. And on the banks of that river is gold. You can take as much as you want. So it's not that you have to go out and, oh, will it fit in the budget, you know? Like that, you know what I'm saying? So it's just whatever you want. It is as unlimited wealth. They always remain youthful. They never get old. Right? They have their power. They have their, you know, their health. That everything is whatever we would consider is what we want here. They have. But the problem is since the soul isn't the body, it won't satisfy the soul. So that's why it requires devotees. Otherwise, that's what will maintain the balance. They may go off a little bit, but then they'll come back because of remembering the Lord. So that's the thing. They do, out of fear of Him, the wind blows. Otherwise, Vayu might sit around and party also. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So. Yes.
You have given example of Chinese philosophy, and I wonder, in their philosophy, they consider that masculine and the feminine principle exist because both of them are not self-sufficient, and that's why beyond of them are non-dual Tao. And they consider that only Tao, because he doesn't have a gender, can be self-sufficient.
But why do they say it's no gender? I mean, they just see it's they're speculating and all that. So the point is that the Wu then is the origin of all that. But the point is that that's the point is that comes down these masculine and feminine principles. But the point is that those both have to be inherent in the Wu Ji for it to be in the Tai Ji. In other words, where does it come from? You can't make something. It's just like I take wool, I can make a wool blanket. I can't take nothing and make a wool blanket. So that's the problem. They won't take it that far. They're taking it the Wuji is impersonal. There's a feature that's impersonal, but the point is there's a person. Otherwise, if the ultimate doesn't have the masculine and feminine aspect, why will it be there here? So therefore, for the masculine and feminine to function as masculine and feminine, then they are dependent on each other. Because why is it masculine unless there's feminine? It means, why is something big unless there's something small? If everything's exactly the same size, there's no such thing as big and small. So there's always this comparison. So feminine is feminine because of the comparison to the masculine. Masculine is masculine because of the comparison to the feminine. Right? But they both have to come from the Supreme for them to exist at all. Otherwise, how do they exist? They come out of nothing? I mean, of course, that's their philosophy. Nothing gives rise to everything. How does that work? But, you know, we're just trying to show is that there's these concepts are there in the philosophies. But they're not developed enough because without devotion, they can't get beyond that there is the ultimate is simply unchanging and eternal. You know, maybe all pervading. That's as much as they can get. They can't get beyond that impersonal concept. Does that make sense? So, because of that, they'll try to use their mundane logic. That's where it falls apart. Just like the impersonalists, most of what they say is the same as what we'll say, up to the point of liberation. But at that point, then, they're trying to make a complete meal out of just something. You know, it's just like, if I'm going to, let's say, there's a meal. Where does the meal go? If I'm going to serve you the meal, where does it go? Just in the air? Oh, that's going to be after you get it. But how do I deliver it to you, and where does it rest?
Plate.
On the plate. So they're trying to make a complete plate philosophy. So the whole meal, the whole everything, everything is coming from the plate. The plate is producing the food. That's the problem. They don't understand. It's just there as a support. But the whole point is you only need a plate if there's food. If there's no food, what does the plate do? So there's that. You have that kind of aspect in the philosophy is that you have, let's say you have some butter and you have a leaf cup. So now the question comes up, who's the support? Because the butter is sitting in the plate. Right? So therefore, that means the plate is the support. Right? And so, then in that case, then the plate becomes the most important, or the cup becomes the most important thing, not the butter. The same time as then if the butter is the supreme, then, you know, it's independent of the plate. Right? So therefore, then, the fool is discussing this philosophy in his head, mulling this over, while he's walking back to the ashram with a cup with butter in it. Then he's trying to think, so this way, so how do I prove it? So this way, when I hold it in the regular way, with the cup down and the butter up, then we see it works. Now, if the butter, I should be able to do the other way, because then the butter becomes the support, right? Because he's looking at it from just the concept of gravity, but he's not thinking. So he turns the cup upside down, the butter falls on the floor. You know, so that's the thing, is that fools sit around and mull over these things when they don't have the capacity to deal with that and go beyond that. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that you'll see elements that are similar. You know, just like all scriptures will talk about supreme or talk about God. So from that point, they're all common, but who they're talking to, you know, the mentality, the place, the circumstances, there are going to be differences. That's why then there, you see differences in how they're going to understand that and apply it. But they have that same common point. So what is common, that is brought out. What's not common, that's left. Because the Veda, being knowledge, it includes everything that's in any other philosophy, in any other culture, religious, everything. It's all there. It's just that in the Veda, it has its particular place. While then, with someone else, it takes on something more. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have, you know, the earrings, right? You know, there's a certain amount of earrings that go, like that or nose. And then that's it. That's all that's there. So it just adds something to it, right? There's the beauty, and yet that adds that little bit to that. But now if you try to make a whole lifestyle out of that, then they pierce everywhere. Like sometimes people have hundreds of them. So it goes beyond. It loses that beauty. Does that make sense? It balances out. Does that make sense? So same with everything. You know, a little bit of makeup, then that works. But you put too much makeup, then it doesn't work. So does that make sense? So it's the same with everything. You know, it's like you see it in the on the runways, that they'll have they'll be doing the nice clothes and that, but then they'll have these shows where it's stuff no one could wear, right? The models can't even wear it, right? You know, they walk down, they fall over. It's unwearable, but they do it somehow or another. And why? I have no idea. I guess people get bored, you know, but whatever. You know what I'm saying? They just take it beyond. So it's that. Or you're sitting in traffic there with everybody else and the speed limit's, you know, whatever it is, 50 kilometers an hour. But you're sitting there and you're one of those Bugattis and you can do 400 kilometers. But so what? You can only do 50. That Fiat 500 next to you, it can also do 50. You know? And it's easier to park. I mean, if you can park under a truck, then of course, the Lamborghini would be great. But since you're not parking under the truck, then the Fiat's an advantage. You know what I'm saying? You just take things too far, and it goes out. It just loses the plot. So that's what happens. You call it that because it overemphasizes something. Does that make sense? So there's one philosophy, but because of the mundane consciousness within karma and jnana, then overemphasizing something, then it gets a name. So it's called Buddhism, or it's called the Abrahamic, or it's called, you know, the Tao, or it gets these things. So they're just taking those elements and then trying to make a complete meal out of that. You know, it's like the kids trying to make a complete meal out of a bar of chocolate and some cookies. You know, I mean, in their mind is perfect. You know, it doesn't get better than that. But, you know, the mother kind of somehow or another amazingly never approves. Not as a meal. Snack, yes. Meal, no. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it has its value in its place. But they take it beyond that. They try to make it complete when it's incomplete. So that means only Bhagavan understanding, that's complete, because Bhagavan includes Paramatma Brahman. But if you try to make a complete philosophy out of Paramatma or a complete philosophy out of Brahman, that it won't work. You can't explain the whole philosophy. You can't explain everything. So that's why you see in their discussions, they don't discuss these points. Does that make sense? Yeah. Samshaya, so the doubt. The great Shakti, Maya, can be the shelter of the senses and creators. Uttara. But Aja also pays tribute. Samshaya. Right? So the point is this. The great Shakti, she can be the shelter of the senses. You're saying the Supreme is the Bhagavan is the shelter of the senses. But we see as they're offering all their tributes to Maya, and Maya's giving it to the Supreme. So Maya can be the shelter of the senses. But the point is this. Is that the feminine potency is also paying tribute to Krishna. Right? Shamshaya. Another doubt. Jivas are the shelter of the presiding deities of the senses. Right? So, Uttara. They are like regional controllers given power for the senses, through which they can enjoy by the devatas, who are given power by you, the master of the universe. The jivas are not the shelter of the devatas, but you are their shelter since you give them power. Shruti spoke thus to the Lord. Right? So you're going to get the aspect is that, but the jivas are the shelter because you're saying if we don't do our work, they can't do theirs. You know, it's just like saying, I'm the cause of the business because if I don't do my work, you don't pay me. If I don't do work, you don't pay me. So that means that I'm the one that's causing the paying. You know, so it's just, it gets everything backwards. So the point is no. The power that's coming there is not coming from the jiva. The jiva doesn't produce the power of the senses. They may engage the senses, but they don't produce the power. Neither do the demigods. Neither does the external energy. So only Krishna does.
Good? Now, it seems that in the tendencies to take the ascending process.
Yes, so yes.
To find some reason according to our material logic, no?
Yes.
So it is the same thing for the demigod and
everybody does it. Doesn't matter who it is, they all do it. If they're conditioned souls, they'll do that. Why? Because you understand something by referring to something already known.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So that means, what is your basis of knowledge? It's your own experience.
Yes.
And then you expand that by connecting, I have an experience, I connect something to that experience.
Yes.
Right? Now I could say it's double. Then, with those two things, then I connect a third thing to that. Now it's triple. Then I take a fourth. And just like that, we slowly, slowly expand our knowledge.
Yes.
But it's always connected to something we already know. Right, you can't run it on something you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have an experience of it. That's why in logic, in the syllogism, there has to be example. Right, it's the middle section, because you have to explain it and give example so that you make it relevant to the person. So I've made my point. I've given the reason. But it's not understood.
No.
I give an example. Now I can connect it to my already our existing impression. From that existing impression, now I can relate it and I understand. Then I show how what I'm saying is related to your impression, and therefore and it is it's the main point that you're trying to establish from your impression.
Yes.
Right? So that means that you're bringing near, right? Then you're going to give the conclusion on, so therefore this is the point, and this is how it's used, this purpose is how it applies. Right? Because I've made the point, so then, you know, like Krishna is God, therefore being God, we have to worship Him.
Yes.
Or surrender to Him. Right? So there's a practical application. In other words, the science has to come in, the application. But the example's not. That may show something, but it's actually the fifth element. Siddhanta is just the science. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that work? So, therefore, since we're starting from always our impressions, the natural tendency is always to work on the ascending process, because I start from myself. Anything I see, then I take it from there, and then so I'm always starting myself as the center and expanding how far I can get.
Yes.
You know, it's like that Professor Frog. It's himself, and then he puffs out his chest, you know, like this. So that's what they're trying to do, but they're the center of it. That's why they don't like it when you say there's God, because they're not the center anymore. And they're very attached to their own speculation running on the line that they do. And if someone else, and now if you have something that everybody accepts, okay, he's more intelligent, he's put together something, that everyone accepts this particular, you know, academic, then everybody else's theories have to be in line with that. And so there is still one center. I may be the better at it. I consider myself amongst my peers the superior of all of them, because my appreciation and understanding and application and the logic in this field is better than all my other peers. They're good, of course. You know, you don't want to, I mean, I can't be the only one. You know, we have to, it's a community, but I'm the best. But the point is, when you come here with God, that means none of you are, and it starts with someone else. And then it's kind of like, where's the academy? So that's why it's so vehemently disapproved of. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty that comes up. So the Vedic system is, it's at least you could say, as far as the religious process, studying scriptures, trying to apply it into your life and the practical lifestyle and your sadhana and these kind of things, you're at least minimum accepting that aspect from the descending process, that it comes from scripture. And from scripture, then that's where Anuman's for. Anuman is not for speculating from myself out. It's for using the speculative process from out to in. That's what it's for. So people who use it in the ascending, we call them mental speculators. Then people who are devotees and using the scripture to understand what the scripture is saying, then we'll say that they're thoughtful. You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difference. You know, it's just like someone uses that knife, you know, to heal someone. You call them a surgeon. You know, you use it not to heal the person, then, you know, they Jack the Ripper or something. You know, so does that make sense? Still, they're using the knife in exactly the same technical way. You know, in the context of medicine, but one is giving the person life, one's killing the person. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that we have to understand how these terms are used. A different term is used, you know, the different term is used because the context is different. So for us, it becomes easy if we can always use one term, one word, one term for everything. But that doesn't work. Just like if you use only one of the, let's say, 10 options in the synonyms, then it will work some nicely in some places. Some places is okay, and other places it just doesn't match. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let us say, the child's not listening to the father. You know, so if you tell the child, just says, this person's a relative of yours, you should listen to them. It's the wrong application. You know, this is your father, you have to listen. That makes sense. But let's say they don't know that there's a relation with that person. Then let's say this person's related to you. Then it's concept. Then it's there, the father. So in the one, relative works. In the other, it doesn't. So that's the point, is that the speculation means you're applying anuman, or the point of, what's anuman? What's the translation of anuman?
Inference,
yes. You're using inference in the inductive way. So that's called speculation. But when you use inference from the deductive, you're starting from the authority of Shabda. Then I'm seeing something here. So Shabda says this. How does that connect? That's where I'm contemplating. And then I start to connect how it gets here. Then I can, when I see the object with the senses, pratyaksha. Then I'm able to appreciate the point the Shastra is making. So I see Shastra when I do that. Yes. Does that make sense? So that's why I'm saying is that the Shastra Chakshus, you're not actually seeing through the senses, you're seeing through Shastra. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to do here, is reverse this mundane process. So that's the point, is that in the spiritual world, there's only deductive, because Krishna is the center, and everything comes out from Krishna. Even all other living entities are connected to Krishna. They have their relationship to Krishna. So what's your relationship with them? Right? So it's just like, okay, you know, let's say the cowherd boys, the mother Yashoda. So being Krishna's mother, then, and so then, you know, mothers are listened to, and therefore then when they're in Mother Yashoda's house to see Krishna, then they have to, you know, not displease Mother Yashoda. You know, they have to behave themselves. They have to be, you know, nice boys. Like that. Does that make sense? But when they're out in the fields, then Mother Yashoda is not part of the equation. Therefore, they can go crazy. You know, and that's just, you know, what boys do. So you have to, you see everything in the context of the relationship with Krishna and how you're interacting. Since Krishna is in Mother Yashoda's home as her son, therefore, then you have to relate to him as Mother Yashoda's son. But when he's out in the field, he's not technically in that relationship, Mother Yashoda's son. He is, but that's not necessarily the operation of the relationship there when the boys are wrestling. Does that make sense? You know, unless they want to bring it up for fun, you know. It's like, you're the son of Maharaj Nanda, you know, so that makes you the prince. But I can defeat you, so I'm more powerful than you, you know, just see my prowess. See, then it has a meaning, because that adds, because he's the son of the king, but his friend is stronger, so therefore then it creates that chivalrous thing, so then the wrestling match goes very nicely. You know what I'm saying? So it's always seen in the context of Krishna. But in the material world, everyone will see it in the context of themselves. Right? They won't see it. And everybody else is in context of themselves. I like this person, so they can be. I don't like that person, they can't be involved. You know? And this person, I don't like them, you know, by my socio-philosophical kind of thing, even though the guy's a nice guy, but I'll ignore that. You know, just like science. There's facts that are there that obviously don't support their theory, so they'll just put that in a go down somewhere, in a back room somewhere, label it like this, you know, give it some numbers so that no one even knows what it is, and then we'll just ignore it. So we'll do that, because we take ourselves at the center. So that's why everything is inductive in the material world. Even the deductive is they're using the deductive just in its connection with themselves. Which is natural, because it means you are a person, so you're going to perceive everything from your position. But the difficulty is religious-wise, that's why you see everyone who accepts the Vedas, they have the same culture and same approach. They can, on the religious level, they can all get along. But on the philosophical level, that's where the problem comes up. Because then, from there, they'll take the scriptures. And then, how do they get from the scripture? They're taking the scriptures here. The supreme is there. Now they'll use the inductive method to get from the scripture to the supreme. Right? While for the Vaishnavs, what the scripture says is not different from Krishna. So that Shabda is starting from Krishna and coming down from there to us. Does that make sense? So that's why you'll see is that the Hindus will take that. So, They'll use the deductive in the culture, inductive in the philosophy.
Yes.
Right? And we'll have a tendency, because we come from a background that's not actually based so solidly in religion as a lifestyle, that the philosophy, we'll accept that because we don't have any philosophy in the deductive sense. But to be religion, we'll use inductive. Therefore, you see, the devotees have one philosophy, so many different cultures. While the Hindus have one culture, so many different philosophies. But you see, the Acharyas, there's one culture, one philosophy. So that's why we're given the culture, so that we can have one culture. Does that make sense? Because it's the only one that perfectly centers around Krishna. It's the only one that's complete. Does that make sense? Yeah.
If we serve to Krishna because he is Bhakti Vatsala, cares about us, and is still in the context of ourselves, is it against or attitude of his Bhakti?
I mean, the point is that if we're seeing Krishna's Bhakti Vatsala, and then in that way, then we have, you know, some appreciation of Krishna, then the point is that appreciation is good. But if the emphasis is too much on ourselves, that's always going to be a problem. Because if we're talking about a relationship, it's our relationship with Krishna. So in Krishna being Bhakti Vatsala, so what's our relationship with him? He's taking care of the devotees, but why? Because of his affection. So what are we doing for Krishna to reciprocate that? So if it's just we're very happy to receive things. You know, it's just like the father. The son just gets stuff from the father. But at the same time, there has to be some respect for the father. There has to be that surrender to the direction, the instruction, and does that make sense?
Is it normal that first step is completion?
First step will always be that, because we only know inductive. So that's why mixed devotional service means it's a mix of deductive and inductive. So when it becomes purely deductive, that's then when we've come to pure devotion, because it's just about Krishna. And then we see ourselves in context of Krishna. We see everybody else in context of Krishna. The situations, the facilities, everything in context of Krishna. The results you can get in context of Krishna. Then that's pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So pure devotional service and the desire for that, then that works. Does that make sense? If that's one's desire that you're trying to get, even though you don't have, it still will be categorized as pure, if the attitude is right in the line of pure devotion. But if it's like, oh no, we're fine, we're not fanatics, we don't get into all that stuff, then where's the attitude that I'm trying to get to pure devotion? So then it's just a matter of, I am who I am and that's good enough. You know, Krishna has to accept me for what I am. He does, that's why he's sitting in your heart. Problem is you have to accept yourself for what you are, and you're not the body, so who are you? Because you say, no, I'm this, and I behave like this, yeah, and then next life, then how are you going to behave? What happened to the I'm this? You understand? So that's the difference. Yeah. Okay, Vriti. The next Anucheda further affirms the blissful nature of the Lord's form by providing quotations from the scriptures. Anucheda 51. Therefore, the Lord has no hands because he has hands which are different from material hands. Right? So that's the point being made. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled. And thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair, and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:60-45. Yeah, that's probably why zombie movies are so popular these days. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:60-45. Thus the Lord's hair and limbs described in the scriptures are the blissful sarup of the Lord. Others do not have such a sarup. The difference is clear. Brahma gave a benediction to Hiranyakashipu which prevented death by living or non-living entities or objects, but this did not include the instruments of the doer, such as his nails. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:3-37. Or, the meaning is that he has also given the boon of not being killed by anything with or without prana. The Lord's nails, limb, which killed him, arose from hands which have life, and thus the nails are said to have life. But the nails are themselves without life. Right? So even within the technical points then he's giving. So, we're saying anything within this material world can't kill him, but the Lord's beyond. He's the actual doer. Right? Or if he's saying he can't be killed by a doer, right? So means someone from here, he's killed by the instrument of the doer, his nails. Right? If you say you can't be killed by anything with prana, means life force. Krishna has life force, but the nails don't have specifically life force. You know, so in so many ways, the Lord has fun and fulfills the aspect. Divyo hyamurta purusha sa bahya bhyantaro yaja aprano hyamana subro kshadat parata paraha. The attractive person is without form, is inside and outside, is unborn, without pranas, without mind, pure and superior to the akshara, prakriti. Mundaka Upanishad 2.1.2. Asya Mahata is without form. It means he's without a specific. He is form.
Yes.
So he's without a form. He is form. So his form is the original form. That form is that middle sized form. So Krishna Shama's threefold bending form. That is form.
Yes.
So he doesn't have a form. He is form. Like that. There is no inside and outside. He is one entity. So even though the material, all his energies expand from him, they're still within him. He's inside everything because everything expands from him, but he's outside of everything because everything's within him. So that's the thing, is these things can only be understood by devotion.
It's inconceivable.
Yes, inconceivable. So that's why I said before, the Vedanta says that for inconceivable understanding, you have to accept Shastra, because it's beyond logic. You have to accept.
Some rare saints in Abrahamic traditions approach to God as the husband, not to as controller and God. Can we say that they approach him as to Bhagavan, or it's still Paramatma interaction?
Means Paramatma is a person, but the whole point is that there's a touch of the idea, because Paramatma is the person is generically controlling the energies, or is controlling the generic energies. Does that make sense? So it has both that personal and impersonal together. You know, the impersonal is one, then Bhagavan's the other, but this is in between. It has both elements. So they may be dealing a little bit more with that, because ultimately he's God. It's not about him as a person. You know what I'm saying? One may accept that God's a person, but it's not about him being a person. Does that make sense? Like, what does God like to do? What's his schedule in the day? What does he eat? Who does he hang out with? These aren't the questions. That's the Bhagavan aspect.
If you describe his beauty, personal beauty, can you say that this is a level of puja because he wants to enjoy the beauty?
That maybe, but then you're saying it's getting into the conjugal, because you can appreciate beauty from not necessarily that relationship. But the point is that it has elements of that. It can be cultivated and taken forward to pure devotion. But on its own, it may be lacking in that. You know what I'm saying? Because it doesn't take it far enough. But the person, then that person, you could discuss with them those particular points and take it further, and they may appreciate. You know what I'm saying? Because it's an understanding of the Lord. So, therefore, then we're saying here that whatever is that religious practice that they're having, they can still practice that, but they have to. That they would have the proper Vedantic view. You know what I'm saying? The external ritual is the secondary form to express it. So even if they continue in their own, this secondary religious aspect, that the primary understanding's right, it'll still work. Does that make sense? But it's just that it only has certain things. Okay, five times a day you're respecting the Lord, but it's supposed to be 24 hours a day. So it's a start. Five times a day is more than most people. You know what I'm saying? Because it's regulated, it's there. Otherwise, let's say some Christians, they'll get up in the morning, might pray before, like they'll pray before they go to bed, and they might pray when they eat. But generally, that's at the formal dinner. I don't think when they're sitting there with a bowl of cereal that anybody's grabbing any hands and saying prayers. You know, so that means then technically that's three times formally. Then only if something goes wrong, then you might add in some more. You know, and then some will go to, you know, church every day. Some will go a few days a week. Some will go just once a week. You know what I'm saying? So the idea is you're trying to establish a minimum regulated aspect. But this way, then you can be always absorbed. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So we don't have any problem with all these others. They can do whatever they, you know. But the point is the understanding should be complete. Because when the understanding is incomplete, that then creates the problems between the religious processes. Yes. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Is that, let's say, you know, you have one region, they have some food. Another region, they have their food. And from one region to another, you may appreciate the other region's food, or you may not. Does that make sense? You know, you may say, that's not food. You know, let's say, like if we're in China, I bring them a bowl of rice, that's food. But if I take a bowl of rice and give that to, let's say possibly a Russian, they might say, that's not food. But if I bring them a bowl of buckwheat, you know, grechka, then they'll say, that's food. And the Chinese guy will go, what's this? You know what I'm saying? But the point is they both are nourishing. So that's the whole thing. So then that's the... Does that make sense? So it can be, but the point is the Vedic is the natural lifestyle of the soul. You can say the conditioning, you can deal with the conditioning, but the Vedic system acknowledges and absorbs all conditioning. While other regional ones only deal with the regional area, and that only with most people, not everybody. You know, there's always that weird guy, even though he lives there, he's as if he's from somewhere else. Does that make sense? So it's the balance is there.
I don't have doubt in the supremacy of Vedic tradition. I just want to understand where they will go after they get the saints from Middle Age Abrahamic tradition who sincerely approach to God as the person.
But what's their goal? What do they want from this person? Means Daksha. We see in the sixth canto, then the Hamsaguya prayers. He's personally in front of the Lord, accepts the Lord as a person, and is offering prayers. But his only interest is heavenly pleasures.
Yes.
Just because you accept him as a person doesn't mean that you're interested in interacting with him as a person. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, why is it guys are so enthusiastic about going to heaven? Simply because there's so many green embroidered couches and so many virgins. Where's God in all this? You know, or you go to heaven and Christians don't talk about a whole lot there. It's about, you know, a bunch of clouds and people with wings and harps and like that. And there's not much talk. So they don't even get down to green couches and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's supposed to be there. Some, I think the JWs and they talk about, you know, you see the, you know, the young daughter, you know, in the boat, you know, having some time, you know, some fun on the lake, and that she's sitting there with a nice cuddly full grown lion that talks, you know. So yeah, throw in little cartoons and, you know, like that. You know, that question is, are you going to bump into the Roadrunner, you know, like that, or Bugs Bunny? Does that make sense? You know, and that's good for the girls, that's good for the parents, you know, the guys that are single, they want to know if they're going to bump into Jessica Rabbit, you know. So it's just, you know, what's happening in there? It doesn't explain. Does that make sense? And the Judaic, I don't think it talks so much about it either. So, you know, there's probably a chance that once Muhammad was preaching to, they kind of want to, well, why should I go there? So he has to explain why you go there. And then it's like, okay, it's cool, I'm going. You know, so that's the ultimate thing, is that it's still fruitive and it's about that. So you can accept, that's the point of the theistic religion, is that you accept that there's a supreme and that the laws are coming from the supreme. But the whole point of it is the fruitive result you get from it, or liberation. So it's still within a dharma and a moksha. Does that make sense? So that's the point of Paramatma, is that worshipping him, then you're going to go to the heavenly planets. Does that make sense? Or also worship him, you can get to Vaikuntha. It has that personal, so it's about the person, but it's still within that context of he's God. Right? So in other words, Bhagavan, it's about him as a person. Paramatma, it's about him as God. And then Brahman, it's about him as the Supreme. Does that make sense? So that it's just a matter of where your values are. So, yeah? Yes?
Maharaj, I wanted to ask about this inductive process. When we are trying to please Krishna, then, at least for me, it seems that then we are trying to, we are using this process to determine if Krishna is pleased or not. Like, when we cook something, and after it's offered and everything, and if it tastes nice, then we think Krishna liked it also.
Yes.
So, but...
But you're starting from Krishna. It's about, does Krishna like it? Then you're engaging your senses. It's not about, I like it, and so Krishna must have also liked it. I thought it was good, so Krishna must have liked it. You know?
So how can we, is there a way, how can we tell if we do something that Krishna is satisfied?
At least you see how the Vaishnava is happy. Because the point is we follow the direction as the Acharya said, so if we follow that, it'll work. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Let's say you're given directions. Right? And you follow those directions, you'll get to the place. Right? But it's not that at each place you have to ask, is this going to there? You can, if you like, but you don't have to. You know, so it cooks nice, it tastes nice, and then what's the problem? Do you need a confirmation behind that? You have to have the voice from the sky going, that sabji was fabulous, you know, like that. And, you know, flowers rain down from the heavenly planets and all that. But that's a problem because it gets in your subject. I mean, if you want the confirmation, you can get it, but then you have to pick all the flowers out of your subject. You know, and then there's a problem because you're probably eating inside, so then you don't really know if they shower flowers unless you go up on the roof. Right? That's if you have a flat roof. If you don't have a flat roof, then they might be all stuck in the gutter. And then they're stuck in the gutter, then you have to clean the gutter because the next time it rains. So, you know, whether you really want to get into that one or not. So, you understand? So that need of confirmation, who's that for? Is it that Krishna's pleased, or it's you want to know that I am pleasing? You know what I'm saying? Which is good to be pleasing to Krishna, so that's why it's devotional. But the point is that Krishna pleased. It's that it tastes nice, the devotees are happy, so then it must be good. You know, the pujari didn't come in from after putting it on the plate, putting the plate down and come back, and the plate was, you know, thrown over in the corner or something like that. So, you know, it must have been okay. Does that make sense? Okay.
Asya mahato bhutasya nishasitam eta jyad rigveda. From the Lord's breathing arose the Rig Veda, Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad. The Lord does not have a material form made of bones, fat, and marrow. It does not arise from yoga practice. Because He is the Supreme Lord, His form is eternal, invincible, and all-pervading.
Right. Yeah, so that's Varaha Purana. Yeah. So from the breathing arose the Rig Veda. So the authority is the Veda. That's coming from the Lord's breathing. So we can't doubt the Veda. That's why it's the fourth offense for the holy name is to blaspheme the Veda or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. You can say, oh, it's not our book, but the point is it's still Krishna's book. His non-material form is not produced by some great yoga practice, yogitvat, by some desire. It is eternal since he is the Lord, right? Because we have this idea, if there's desire, then things are going to happen. Right? Because if I have desire, then you're going to think about it, you get attached. By attachment, then you're going to endeavor. Right? And that means you'll get a result. Then there'll be the happiness. So, therefore, desire is very important. But for him, it's not that he's produced by some desire. Right? The Brahman desires to do this, therefore they take on a form. You know, so you get Ishwar. No, that's him. It's not different from him. It is eternal since he is the Lord. The Lord has a body. He has knowledge, desire, and action since he is a doer or an agent. Like a potter, that body is eternal like the Lord. Since it is the sense organ of the Lord, it has knowledge like the Lord. Thus, the Lord's body and senses are different from the jivas. So, our senses only can collect knowledge. Krishna's senses are knowledge. His senses know everything he knows. Because his senses are non-different from him. Okay. The phrase jivach chavam is used in this verse. The body of the jiva is, by nature, a corpse, since it is given life by the combination with consciousness, the atma. Right? So you have dead body, you add the atma, then you have a living body. Right? So the idea that the soul is not in the body and the corpse is still living, that doesn't really make any sense. Like that. So it's because the atma is there, that's why then you have it. The Lord's body, however, is always living since it is one unit of consciousness. Right? So it's not that there's the consciousness and then the dead matter. Is the Lord, his body, is him. There's only one consciousness. The body and him are the same. Thus it is different from the jiva's body. Because it is full of eternal bliss and consciousness, it is worthy of worship. Rukmini spoke thus to the Lord. Riti. The next two anuchetas ascertain that there is no real contradiction in the absolute truth, as assumed by the followers of various philosophies and conclusively established that only the devotees understand the absolute truth as the ultimate goal of life. Because all others are going to look at it from some other material point of view. Right? The Lord's going to be part of it because they're not in control. So a smart person understands they're not in control. So if you're not in control, who is in control? Right? And what's your purpose of controlling? Right? So you'll enjoy. So you don't care if someone else is controlling as long as you enjoy. Right? You don't care if your mom cooks dinner as long as you enjoy dinner. Does that make sense? So there's no problem really for the materialist to accept God and as a person that he does things. But ultimately they can't really understand. Does that make sense? Yeah. So only the devotees who really understand. Anucheta 52. When the various Shrutis argue about whether the Lord has name and form, the following is concluded. Astiti nastiti cha vastu nishtayor. Eka stayor bhinna virudha dharmano. Avekshitam kinchana yoga shankhyayo. Samam param Hyanu kulam brihat tat. The same supreme Brahman, without contradiction, is perceived by yoga and jnana with contrary qualities because the followers are fixed in a particular faith directed to the same object. Right? Does that make sense? So they see problem because they're directed at the Lord that has the same quality that they're able to perceive. So they're starting with what they can perceive and only accepting that, right? So that's the problem with the modern, is if I can't perceive it with my senses, they don't even discuss it. Like that. What I perceive in my senses, I'll take that and speculate and try to come up with some weird theories. But it starts from my senses, what I perceive. And if I don't perceive it, it doesn't exist. You're like physicists, they don't perceive the mind. Therefore, for them, it doesn't exist. Okay. Does that make sense? So, yeah.
So mind without samskara of perception is very limited.
Yes. Because whatever our particular samskars are, that's all we can perceive. You can't perceive more.
If you have spiritual samskara?
Yes, then you can see. So then you can actually see. So that's why it says that someone who doesn't know the Supreme or doesn't know Brahman does not actually see, even though he's seeing. His eyes are working, but he's only seeing the dead matter. He's not actually understanding why it works, why it does all these things. They just see it does this. This thing does this, you know, the smoke floats and other things don't. And they just see that and they make this whole, you know, seeming, you know, science out of this observation. But they're not actually seeing because they don't understand the Lord does that. How is it that there's this potency that you've taken wood and it's floating in the air? Since when does a piece of wood float in the air? But now a piece of wood is floating in the air, or clouds. That's, you know, millions of tons of water is floating in the air. Where does that potency come from? You know, they come up, well, the sun, this and this and that, and somebody, but they don't really, they're not looking at what's the potency to make that able to work. They don't understand potencies, really. To some, it's certain ones they'll catch, but the rest of them, they don't.
If you cannot understand potency, it is the origin of potency.
Yes, he's the origin of potency. So that's the whole point. That's what we're getting. Is that you know, it's like we were discussing before, the Chinese philosophies, you have the Tai Chi. So you have this yin and yang and how the qi and li, all the everything is working in this world. Which is the subtlety and everything like that. But at the same time it's coming from the wu, but then the wu is nothing. So how does something come from nothing? So that's the problem. So that's the difficulty. These philosophies then, you know, used as a basis, you can't really fully understand. Point is it comes from, so that wu has to be a person. It may be saying it's from the Brahman aspect, but that Brahman, the wu, if it's the source of that, the Taiji, so it's, you're dealing with the impersonal or the Vishuru. But the point is why is there form? Why is there action? Why is there results? Unless there's an origin in that. So that means there has to be a person behind the wu that therefore is the support of the Taiji. Does that make sense? So that they don't take it far enough. That makes sense. Yes.
Question is previous topic. About application. If our kids don't have faith to cure bhakti, should we firstly convince them that Krishna is a god and controller, or it will?
You have to just see it. It'll be very individual. Preaching is always individual. You just have to see what works and what doesn't. So you can generally feel as you start to go on something, then there you see feel this resistance. So then you just adjust. You know, it's just like, let's say you're talking to someone who's upset, right? And so you're trying to use some words. You're making an endeavor. And as each word is being said, or each syllable is being said, you're seeing the reaction. And as the reaction is there, then you're either continuing with that word or turning it into something else. Does that make sense? Or you might even start on one example and find it's not working and switch to another one. So you just do that. You're just going with what works with the person. But the idea that there's a supreme, there's a person, and so therefore that selfless surrender, that you can always discuss. You don't have to get how much the personal aspect is there, because you're dealing with this point of he's God, we're inferior, and so we're surrendering to the superior position. You know, and that's good qualities. It means to do that, that's selfless, it has all these things, so it's all nice stuff. They'll accept that.
If a child wants to attain material advancement, can we tell him that Krishna can help him, or it will create wrong motivation?
No, the point is that you want material a material benefit. But the point is how is that working? Where does it come from? You say, I work, therefore I get money, therefore I have my stuff. But the point is why is there even the concept of economics? Right? In history, is there someone who invented economics? Someone invented families. Someone invented the idea that someone's in charge. Someone invented the idea if you hit someone else in the head, then they fall over. No, all these things are eternally there. People work with them, and then working with these things, working with economics, then they come up with their different systems. But the principle of economics, who's created that? No one. No one claims. You understand? So that's the point is that you have to understand is it's working because of Krishna. Therefore, if you're pleasing Krishna, it will work better. It's his economics. Right? It's his influence. It's his knowledge. So if he's pleased, it works better. So then they're seeing it in the proper context. But the idea is that, you know, and then you just can discuss about pure devotion. Does that make sense? So you're including what they're interested in and then taking it further. Does that make sense? Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura.